Hi, I'm Avery Elfelt, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media, KHNS, where I work in Haines, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news on Alaska News Nightly or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
The debt ceiling, hundreds of millions in federal money for Alaska projects, and a new congressional delegation for our state. What does the rancorous start to organizing the U.S. House reveal about how members will get along? How will widely differing priorities between the Republican-controlled House and the Democrat-controlled Senate affect getting the people's work done in Congress? There's a lot to discuss as Senator Lisa Murkowski joins us today for Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Local sponsors do right by their business and for the community by supporting public media stations. Thank you for considering adding your corporate support. You'll be in good company. Ensure the vitality of public radio by including it in your estate planning. Together, we build a sustainable future for quality media. Thank you. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. U.S. senators are clearly very, very busy people. We are still waiting for Senator Lisa Murkowski to arrive at the studio. She is on her way and will be here within a few minutes. Senator Murkowski won her fourth election to the U.S. Senate in November, fighting off a state party-backed challenge from Republican Kelly Shabaka. The senior senator had a tough re-election battle in 2010 when she ran a write-in campaign to beat party-endorsed candidate Joe Miller. The need to be more independent to prevail has at various times put Senator Murkowski at odds with her own party. So how does that both help and also challenge her work for Alaska priorities? We'll ask her that question and many more when Senator Murkowski arrives, and that should be momentarily. While we're waiting, I want to let people know that you can be prepared to call in and ask questions of your own. It's great to have one of our U.S. senators on hand to answer questions directly from Alaskans. That number statewide is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. So you might want to write that down so you can be ready when Senator Murkowski gets here to ask some questions. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We are going to go to just a little bit of a break here for a moment, and while we're waiting for Senator Murkowski, we'll bring up just maybe a little bit of music for a few minutes while we're waiting here, and as soon as the senator arrives, which she is on her way, we will be back on and talking with Senator Lisa Murkowski today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. There are many ways to support your local public media station. Donate now and arrange to make a planned gift as a bequest. Your legacy will stretch from today to many tomorrows. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Hello, I'm Lori Townsend. This is Talk of Alaska, and we are still waiting for Senator Lisa Murkowski to arrive. She is on her way, and we'll be talking about the big federal infrastructure package that was passed, $1.7 trillion, and a lot of money is coming to Alaska within that package. Senator Lisa Murkowski will be here to answer questions about that funding and other state priorities that are within the infrastructure package. Our call-in numbers for today's program are across the state, 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. That's 907-550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. I think we're probably going to go to a little bit of music right now while we're waiting for Senator Murkowski. She should be here momentarily. She is on her way, and then we'll start our conversation. Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Senator Murkowski is with us now in the studio. So we're going to kind of recap what I started out with earlier in the program. The debt ceiling, hundreds of millions in federal money for Alaska projects, and a new congressional delegation for our state. What does the rancorous start to organizing the U.S. House reveal about how members will get along? How will widely differing priorities between the Republican-controlled House and the Democrat-controlled Senate affect getting the people's work done in Congress? There's a lot to discuss as Senator Lisa Murkowski now joins us for Talk of Alaska. Hello, Senator.
Good morning, Lori. Good to be with you. Sorry I'm a couple minutes late, and sorry for my froggy voice.
Oh, my goodness.
It's kind of like, you know, when the kids all go back to school after Christmas break and everybody picks up the little sniffles. Well, I got them. I feel great, but I sound a little stuffy. But
yeah.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Thank you so much for taking time to be here.
Absolutely.
I know how incredibly busy you must be, so we really appreciate you taking this time. As I said earlier, Senator, you won your fourth election to the U.S. Senate in November, fighting off a state party-backed challenge from Republican Kelly Shibaka. You had a tough re-election battle in 2010 when you ran a write-in campaign to beat party-endorsed candidate Joe Miller. The need to be more independent to prevail has at times put you at odds with your own party.
Mm-hmm.
How does that both help and also challenge your work for Alaska priorities?
You know, I have always conducted myself as a legislator, a lawmaker, who works to bring people together, to take the ideas from both sides and try to figure out how we make this work for the people that we work for, not just for one party or another. And so I have been at odds with my party and with my caucus. And what I come back to is, all right, what's best for Alaska? And if you just follow that model, I'm good with where my center is. It might challenge some of my colleagues that I work with back in Washington, D.C. It might frustrate some of my more partisan friends here in the state of Alaska. But at the end of the day, Alaskans are pretty independent in their views. They want to know, you know, how can you help me? How can you help me? Whether it's like, what are we going to do with the fish disasters that we're seeing on the rivers? How do we respond rapidly following a disaster like we saw with Typhoon Merbok? What are we going to do about some of the not only more national issues like the debt, but internationally, globally, right. What is happening with the situation, the war in Ukraine? Where is China going? So at the end of the day, we got to figure out how we can talk about the problems that we have and find solutions that work for all of us, not be focusing on party politics and the things that just spin us downward.
Well, let's talk about some of what's happening currently. The $1.7 trillion omnibus, it contains nearly a half $1 billion for Alaska. Liz Ruskin's story in December on this bill said projects range from $100,000 for medical equipment in Bethel to nearly $100 million for a new training and fitness center at Wainwright. Senator, when will the money start arriving in Alaska for these projects?
Well, we are in the process now, and some of the funds come a little bit more readily. We've certainly seen that with, for instance, some of the grants for ports infrastructure. We've already seen the dollars that have come through these PIPD grants, whether it's for Port of Anchorage, Port of Nome, what they're doing, the project down in Seward for the Lowell Creek fix there, the Coast Guard set to receive some $225 million for infrastructure here in the state of Alaska. That has already been committed. Much of the broadband funding that is coming our way. We're looking at some $1.5 billion that will come to Alaska by way of broadband. So we're seeing different tranches of that. Keep in mind, though, this is what we call a 5-year bill. In other words, the funding for that full amount will be allocated out over a period.
Sure, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, but we're already 1 year into it, and so as I've shared with Alaskans. Thus far, it's been about $3 billion that is to be directed and allocated to the state of Alaska, whether through water, for water, wastewater, broadband, ports, bridges, ferries. And so as this is coming out, how we stand ready to receive it and to implement it. There's a lot of work that has to go on with the state. But I think the good news for us is this is significant resources coming to us. It exceeds the largest payout that the state has ever received in annual permanent fund dividends. And when you think about the impact to the economy and really what that means to us, it's pretty significant.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today our guest is Senator Lisa Murkowski. We're talking about federal spending priorities and a wide range of other issues important to Alaskans, and you can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255. That's the number statewide, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. There's $300 million allocated to fishery disaster relief. Is mm-hmm. that separate from the Alaska funding, or is that part of that $500 million?
The fisheries disaster money, we have received specific funding to Alaska. The problem that we have with the fisheries disaster funding itself is how it then gets allocated to those who have been impacted, whether you are the small fisherman yourself or the community. And so this is a process that, in my view, needs to be addressed and fixed.
Yeah, it does seem that fishermen often wait months, sometimes years to get these payments, and they can't survive.
Years. So, you know, you think about it. You've got a boat payment that needs to be made on a monthly basis. You have crew you want to keep on. You have to, you've got to educate your kids and feed your family. So these are not things where you can just kind of sit and wait for multiple years. This has been a big challenge for us. I've actually been working on this legislation. Senator Sullivan is also a co-sponsor with legislation out of the Commerce Committee that would work to put together basically a more expedited process. It's one thing to get the fisheries disasters declared at the state level, then at the federal level, but then you've got to get it, that disaster appropriated to, which is what we've done in this omnibus, and then yet another step to get it out to those that have been impacted. So we can't let the agencies as that last bottleneck be a bottleneck that stops things up for 2 and 3 years. And that's what has happened. So we're working to address just that.
All right. We are going to go to the phones and speak with Brent, who is in Haines. Hi, Brent.
Yeah, good morning.
You have a question about the lawsuit.
I do. I'm curious to know what your office is doing about the lawsuit and what you intend to do in the future.
Well, let's give her a little context. Let's give the senator some context here about what lawsuit you're referencing.
The Wild Fish Conservancy lawsuit against the National Marine Fisheries concerning the southern resident killer whale population and their listing of the endangered species and all that. The lawsuit threatens to shut down the Southeast Alaska troll fishery this coming summer. And there's at least 1,000 families in Southeast Alaska that depend on that troll fishery, not to mention the processors and the tenders and the infrastructure surrounding it. Could be a massive blow to our economy if we can't fish this summer. And the Alaska Troller Association spent nearly $100,000 on legal cost fighting the lawsuit to this point. And I'd like to know what kind of support we're going to get at the federal level now and in the future.
Yeah, and
thanks for the question, Brent.
Thanks, Brent. You know, it's challenging when effectively you are using litigation to stop or to really thwart almost an entire industry, and we've seen
an industry that feeds people.
The industry that feeds people sustains so many of our communities. And believe me, I know that this is one that we're watching very, very closely. It's challenging, though. I think Brent's question is fair because it expresses the frustration that so many have when it's like there must be some way that we can stop this. There must be some way that we can get a federal fix to halt the legislation. We can do things like prohibit money being spent to help facilitate something. But with the litigation, this is something that we need to make sure that we are defending and defending well. It is something that I think we will see play out through the courts. But in the meantime, you have the threat hanging over you of not being able to pursue the fisheries. We have, and I'm going to segue here a little bit, Brent, and I apologize because this is not necessarily in your region, but we've got threats to our fisheries all over the state. You look at the collapse of the salmon runs on the Yukon and the Kuskokwim. You look at what is happening now to the Bering Sea fisheries, the Bering Sea crab fisheries, the fact that not only are we not seeing any harvest this season. But in fairness, there's some speculation that it may be years before we have a crab fishery that we can move forward with. So there is so much that is at stake right now for our industry. One thing that I can tell you that I have been focused on is what is it that we need to help protect ourselves from things like litigation, or when we're looking to threats to sustainability of a fisheries. It's understanding what is happening with our fisheries. So as tired as it may sound, we've got to have that research. We've got to have the data. We've got to have the surveys. So you can't have NIMS say, well, instead of doing 5 surveys, we're only going to do 3 surveys this year because it costs money. Well, yes, it does. We need the most sophisticated, updated research and data. That's going to help us with our defense. But when you have environmental groups that decide that they are going to use litigation to shut down an industry, a livelihood, really, for so many Alaskans, that's not right. We take it full on.
Help us understand how the negotiations work on such a massive piece of legislation such as the omnibus bill. Mm-hmm. In the same Liz Ruskin story that I referenced earlier, she noted that you were disappointed that $150 million in icebreaker funding was removed at the last minute, mm-hmm. behind closed doors. You said the money appears to have been diverted to fund security measures on the southern border, saying, because as we saw the diminishment of the funding over on the icebreaker side, we saw the plus up on the border funding. How does this work? How did you see the allocation changing, and what course can you take when that happens? Is there anything you can do?
Well, we're speaking to a broader issue, a broader problem, and it's basically that we have an appropriations process that is not healthy right now. Appropriations Committee used to be a committee where you would have full-on open committee hearings, debates going back and forth on annual budgets, whether it's for Coast Guard. My subcommittee is the department, is Interior, EPA, and other related agencies, including like BIA, IHS. So we would have committee hearings where we would openly debate different aspects of the budget. We would have the oversight of the agencies in beyond just having the secretary come in and defend the president's budget. We would then go to subcommittee markup, where amendments are introduced back and forth.
But you were involved throughout the whole process.
Everybody on the Appropriations Committee is involved throughout that whole process. I'm one of the more senior appropriators. I'm number two on the Appropriations Subcommittee lineup right now. But our reality is we have moved away from that open process of not only committee and full committee markup, and then going to the floor and allowing for each of these bills to be processed in a way that allows for the full participation of everybody in the Senate. Instead, what has happened is, as a subcommittee chairman, I work up my budget, my Interior and EPA budget, working with the chairman of the committee. But we didn't have that opportunity for other members to weigh in with amendments, to add or subtract. We're all working within the budget cap. That's the one agreed upon. But it's frustrating because we don't have a process that works. So direct answer to the question of what happened to the $150 million for the commercial icebreaker, we don't know. We don't know because it's a decision that is made by what we call the four corners. In other words, the majority and minority leaders in both the House and the Senate who have the ultimate and final say-so. What you have done then is you have effectively taken power away from other members of the Senate, other members of the House, and you've given the final sign off to four people. That's a broken process. Mm. That needs to be fixed.
Mm-hmm. And I hope that we have a chance to talk about other areas of the process that may need some addressing. But I want to go back to the phones for a moment before we have to take a break at the bottom of the hour. Megan is in Nome. Hi, Megan.
Hi, good morning, Senator. This is Megan Anders here in Nome. It's great to hear your voice. I want to thank you for your vote on the infrastructure bill and your work on appropriations, as well as leading with independence and diplomacy. As you know, we face a housing crisis across our state, from our small and remote communities to our hub towns like here in Nome, as well as our largest cities with the face of homelessness, as you know, in Anchorage. I envision a role for the Denali Commission in helping to reduce the cost of construction by coordinating our housing, water, sewer, and roads. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are as we might overcome some of these construction challenges.
Well, Megan, thank you. Thank you for the question. I think it's really thoughtful, and it really keys in on so many of the priorities that I heard expressed by Alaskans all over the state when I was spending a lot of time on the road and on the water and in the air throughout this past year. Housing, housing, housing is absolutely key. And how how we can address the high costs has been just a perennial challenge. One of the things that we did in this infrastructure bill that I'm very, very proud of is the funding that was put towards water and wastewater projects. That's going to go a long way to help us reduce kind of those overall those initial costs when it comes to housing. But to your point, how do we maximize the resources that we have available to us, not only through the infrastructure bill, but what I've been able to do this past Congress with congressionally directed spending, where we're able to really target some key areas and the opportunity to do so specifically for housing. I think the Denali Commission can be that collaborating agency, if you will. It's not necessarily well described, but they are an entity that is familiar with so many of the challenges that we face, logistic challenges, and can work with other federal agencies as well as state to leverage and build on some of the assets that we have. It's going to require a level of cooperation that I think is a little bit unprecedented. We have a tendency to, when dollars come our way, whether it's federal dollars or perhaps state dollars, it's like, I finally have something for my project. Therefore, I need to just hold on to it tightly, build it out, prove that I've done well, so maybe I can get yet another grant. That's not going to help us really benefit Alaskans. It's not going to help us leverage the dollars that we need, whether federal, state, tribal. You know, keep in mind, there is extraordinary opportunity through the infrastructure bill and building off of some of the COVID dollars as well that can go through tribes. So we have another avenue as a state to really be more collaborative with these efforts. So we're going to need good leadership, I think Denali Commission, as well as good leaders around the state that are working on housing initiatives. And I know, Megan, you've been very focused on many of the water and wastewater issues over the years and how this all connects to housing. This can be transformative.
We have to take a break here in just about 1 minute, but before we do that, I wanted to get to at least one of the email questions. Mm-hmm. Someone asking about Magnuson-Stevens Act and what's happening there.
It is still, I guess, on pause on the Senate side. As folks know, there was an effort on the House side when Representative Peltola came into office and in her capacity on the committee there, working to try to advance a Magnuson-Stevens bill out of the House side. I think Senator Sullivan would tell you, he's on the Commerce Committee and on the subcommittee that has oversight on this, that they are looking to do within the committee a Senate version of that bill. As I understand, as of this point in time, there is no update on timing as to Magnuson-Stevens and how that might advance. But it is something that I think we need to look to that reauthorization. Certainly very, very, very significant to Alaska's economy when we think about our fisheries.
Thank you. We're speaking with Senator Lisa Murkowski today on Talk of Alaska. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue with more questions and comments as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Senator Lisa Murkowski is in the studio today with us. You can join our conversation if you have questions for Senator Murkowski. Statewide, the number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. Senator Murkowski, there's a 4.6% pay increase for federal employees and military members. Mm-hmm. But recent reporting cites Pentagon statistics that say the income boost will not help as many military families as probably was hoped. It says the Pentagon's numbers say it'll help fewer than 1% of families who are food insecure. It sounds like more action is needed here to support these families. What is the conversation in Congress about ensuring families have what they need as they serve?
It is such an important issue, and I think for some, they find it shocking that that our military and their families are not able to make ends meet on the salary that they receive, and we owe it to them and to their families. They've got a lot of things that they need to be thinking about, a lot of stressors. And wondering whether or not they're going to be able to put food on the table should not be one of them. So yes, in fact, we have done some things to try to address that, but as the study shows, it is not sufficient. I've been working with actually Senator Duckworth from Illinois, a Democrat, a veteran herself, mm-hmm. On some of these issues about how we address not only pay disparity, but food insecurity issues. I think we've got more that we have to do there, most clearly. We passed some important measures in a bill that we call the Don Young Arctic Warrior Act that was included in the National Defense Authorization that provides for a higher bump in pay for those who are stationed here in Alaska. We recognize that not only do you have a higher cost of living, but if you're living in Fairbanks, I'm headed there tomorrow. We're going to be going out to Eielson. You know, it's 20 below up there right now. You have to have tires on your vehicle that are a little bit different than the tires on your vehicle in Georgia. You got to have warmer coats that cost more money. And so it's kind of some of the basic costs that happen in northern climates.
So it's sort of like a version of hazard pay.
It is a version.
Arctic pay.
It is Arctic pay, and that's exactly what we call it.
KUAC reported last week that suicides among Alaska Army members dropped sharply last year. Numbers from the 11th Airborne Division covering Fort Wainwright in Fairbanks and Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage list one confirmed at each post with four others under investigation. Mm-hmm. The total of six is down from 17 in 2021 and the lowest since 2018. Part of this improvement is attributed to the Mission 100 program, where 100% of Alaska soldiers meet with military counselors, and about 40% were referred for more assistance after that. A big piece is destigmatizing asking for help, normalizing that everyone may need some mental health guidance at some point in our lives. What else do you think is needed to ensure the health and readiness of our military members?
Well, again, this is something that when I referred to the Don Young Arctic Warrior Act, something that we really tried to key in on. When you think about those stressors that will cause issues, mental issues that that we should all be cognizant of, it's stressors like finances. So again, what can we do to make sure that financial insecurity is not a concern? We do everything from creating a program to reimburse Alaska-based service members for the cost of a trip home.
Mm-hmm.
For just a little mental R&R. I need a break.
Sure.
I need to see my family. I need to get out of the dark. Everything from making sure that we've got those types of support, the quality of life you mentioned earlier. One very, very costly congressionally directed spending that I was involved in is this physical fitness training center up in Fort Wainwright. You know, if you don't have a way to get out and be physical and recreate and just go running, just relieve some of that because it's, again, it's 20 below, 40 below. The other things that we are doing with mental health and destigmatizing, again, is the Mission 100. But we also know that we need more mental health providers, and we have been working with the military to authorize additional resources to encourage those to participate in the Uniformed Services University of Health Sciences, build up that cadre of experts, if you will. That's a priority because we don't, as we know, have the mental health professionals outside of the gates as well. So it's inside, it's outside. I am traveling today with the senior enlisted official for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's here on J-Bear. Tomorrow we go up to Eielson and Fort Wainwright. A lot of this is focused on quality of life. It's focused on the issue of suicide. One suicide is too many.
Right.
And I think we recognize that every day we need to be working towards that goal of zero. So how we do it, how we focus on it, this has got to be key for us.
Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Mark is in Bethel and has a question about the broadband money. Hello, Mark.
Yeah, hi, Lori. Thanks. Good morning, Senator Murkowski. It's Mark Springer in Bethel. I've been a little bit involved with in the tribal broadband space. So Congress appropriated $1 billion, actually a little bit more, through NTIA for tribal broadband development. And the FCC also made wireless spectrum available to federally recognized tribes around the country, and most of the tribes in Alaska took advantage of that licensing opportunity. And for the last couple of years, there have been several tribally based organizations, Alaska Tribal Spectrum, Alaska Tribal Broadband, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta Tribal Broadband Consortium, that submitted very comprehensive proposals to NTIA for broadband funding. And just recently, they have been told, well, yeah, we'll give your member tribes that are not in now approved projects with GCI and ACS, we'll give them the minimum funding. So I'm just wondering if you'd be willing to, discuss how perhaps the award of tribal broadband funding to the large telecoms in the state, yes, with resolutions from the tribes that they got some of them at the last minute, how that has co-opted economic opportunity for tribes and really their opportunity and their right to exercise economic self-determination, business development self-determination in the broadband space. And I will stand by and listen. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, Mark, thanks, and appreciate your leadership out in the YK Delta on these broadband issues and so many of the other things that you're involved with. You know, there is a recognition when we're talking about broadband dollars that there was broadband funding that came out through COVID funding and certain programs within that on top of what was already existing and in place. Then broadband through the infrastructure bill, but also specific carve out for tribal broadband, which was important. I think we recognize that capacity of tribes to accept whether it's broadband funding or in fairness other areas of federal funding can oftentimes be challenged because you don't have you've got a smaller tribe, you don't have grant writers, you don't have those that have kind of worked this. And so the collaborative effort, I think, to try to help facilitate some coalitions, and I think we saw this through AFN, through their Navigator program that they have established, I think, very successfully. Everything has been, there have been programs, or not programs, but there have been coalitions that have been established to try to take advantage of all this. It hasn't been perfect, and I will be the first one to say that it hasn't been perfect. As I mentioned earlier, we oftentimes don't see a lot of the federal resources, and now when the wave comes at us, everybody's trying to figure out how do you get a piece of it? How do we get that piece of it rather than would it be better if we tried to work together to benefit more, or is this just something that I want to stand in line for and hope for the best? So, Mark, I'd be happy to have a further discussion about kind of where some of the funding opportunities are being missed by certain, not only by certain tribes, but as we're looking to the opportunity to capitalize on this really one-time money, let's make sure that there's equity out there. But you use the term self-empowerment, which is a key.
Absolutely.
It's a key operative to what we're trying to stand up here.
I want to get to an email question here. We got a lot of calls stacking up and we're rapidly running out of time. From Christine, she asks, could you help Alaskans understand what help is available through the Inflation Reduction Act? Are there grants, rebates, and or funding for private residents to retrofit or develop more efficient energy use? She says, thank you for your continued support for Alaskans in the U.S. Senate.
So my quick answer to Christine would be yes. The Inflation Reduction Act, this is a measure that I did not vote for at the end. There are significant provisions that are in the bill that I am supportive, but overall, it was an effort that I think went beyond what we needed to do, recognizing what we'd already put in place with the infrastructure bill, what had already been put in place with ARP. Now, having said that, there are opportunities when you think about weatherization, housing assistance for housing itself, and it is. It's there through programmatic funding. It's there through grant opportunities. I should have a website at the tip of my tongue, but I'm more familiar.
Sure.
I send people to the infrastructure website, which is build.gov. But I think that our office stands ready to assist if there's specific, particularly, and I think where she was going with that question was, is there anything for individuals? Because in more times than not, that's where it gets really challenging is that opportunity, unless there is, for instance, some kind of a rebate program. Yes. That an individual might be able to apply for. So we can help her with that. Give us a call here in the state at my offices or go to our website here and just send a note.
All right. Thank you so much for that. We're going to take another short break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Senator Lisa Murkowski today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Senator Lisa Murkowski is in the studio with us today. We're happy to have her here answering questions. We're going to go back to the phones for a minute. Even though I have tons of questions myself, we're going to let Alaskans ask some questions directly. And we're going to Bill, who is in Haines. Hello, Bill.
Hello.
Your question for Senator Murkowski.
Morning, Bill.
Good morning, Senator Murkowski. Thanks for doing this program once again and for all of your hard work in Washington, D.C., and all of it or most of it for Alaska and for the country as well. But at any rate, like maintaining roads, the ferry service, the Alaska Marine Highway System needs to be maintained, and I'll put a period behind that. And the boats, or in other words, the ferries, and also the terminals and the websites need some upgrading and maintenance to bring them back to the standards we once had in Southeast Alaska. And then this is, I'll just put some points out there for schools, for health care, for keeping families connected. The service needs to be restored, not reduced. And the communities are growing. Ferries stimulate the economy. Travel options are the backbone of the region known as Southeast Alaska. And it's oftentimes seems as if it's forgotten at the expense of filling potholes and putting more lanes through populated other parts of the state. And it's just out of balance as far as federal funding for roads as opposed to funding the AMHS or the Alaska Marine Highway System. And I've heard you, Senator Murkowski, say, I'm pretty sure, that you want to retire in Haines. And when you do retire in Haines, which we are looking forward to, not your retirement, but just having you as a member of our community in Haines, Alaska, you'll see firsthand the need for just what I'm talking about. And then
let's let her answer, Bill. We're running out of time quickly here. So you're concerned about the future of the Alaska Marine Highway System.
Well, Bill, thanks for the question. And you're singing my song here in terms of our Alaska Marine Highway System needs to be maintained. I grew up there in Southeast. As you mentioned, I have a deep fondness not only for Southeast, but Haines. I was there a couple times this summer and was able to take the ferry up from Juneau and down from Skagway there. So I got a little bit of my ferry fix. But it's just a reminder to me of the transportation connections that we have in the state of Alaska that are just a little bit different than you have in the rest of the country and what that means. So what we did in the infrastructure bill, unprecedented in terms of support for ferry systems, $1 billion. Now that's not $1 billion just to come to Alaska, but Alaska gets a significant piece of that to help with our ferry systems. We, for the first time, will be able to utilize federal highway dollars for operation and maintenance, so that will help on an ongoing basis. We've got $250 million for the opportunity for electric ferry. It's not going to work in places like going from Homer to Kodiak, but it sure might work great between Skagway and Haines there. We were also able, in this omnibus bill, to get funding for at least a few of the terminals that need support. Cordova, Chiniga, and Tetitlik will be receiving support to upgrade their ferry docks, but we have to do more. This is something that I need your help with, though, because we've got to be working with the state. It cannot be the federal government that defines what our Alaska Marine Highway system is and what a sustainable system is. So some of these are grant monies, some of these are formula monies, and the state has a direct oversight there. So we need to be making sure that we are using this money, much of it one-time money, to be the lifeline that is able to rebuild a ferry system that's going to work for you right now and your family and for everybody coming after us. So we got some work to do, but we have some resources dedicated to ferries that is unprecedented. And it's one of the things that I'm probably most proud of in the infrastructure bill.
All right. Thanks for the question, Bill. I want to get back to some email questions in just a moment here, and we'll try to get to a couple more phone calls before the top of the hour. But I wanted to get to some climate issues. Mm-hmm. The Washington Post reported over the weekend that the relentless winter storms in California have killed more people than any wildfire event since 2018. Yeah. Winter storms are becoming a huge challenge. Fortunately, no one died after the devastation on the Alaska coast earlier this fall from Typhoon Murbach. But on a recent Talk of Alaska, climate scientist Brian Bretschneider said weather climate events that at one time seemed impossible are now happening. There are fewer periods of calm and more of chaos in relationship to storms and climate-related weather events causing damage. What do you think Congress should be focused on in this regard? And how difficult is the task when many of your congressional colleagues still think climate change is a hoax?
Well, this is a question that is better for a full hour of discussion,
right,
and then some. But what can we do? I will tell you that right now what we're doing is we're responding disaster by disaster. And so when Typhoon Murbach hit, what the delegation did is we went out, we saw the devastation, we worked with the state, assigned a price tag to it. Now we're in line for federal disaster relief. We work with FEMA. But we're not, what are we doing to make sure that maybe the next disaster is not going to be quite as devastating? So where's the resilience? Where's the mitigation? Where can we really work to respond? In fairness, I think we do a lot of that within the infrastructure bill, with what we're doing to build up more resilient infrastructure. Within the omnibus, there's so many of them. It's not the omnibus. It was within the Inflation Reduction Act. There is funding and support for more resilient communities. What does that mean? Does that mean helping St. Michael's?
Well, there's a lot of definitely
Stebbins
a lot of
with their new revetment.
Efforts. You know. Along those same lines, ExxonMobil's past climate research is in the news again. Their predictions were surprisingly accurate about how climate change would advance and what would happen. What is the correct response for the U.S. government to this information? This is a corporation that has made billions from fossil fuels. It's now causing billions in damage to our state, nation, and world. Is there a role for the U.S. government here in relation to what's now known?
You know, how it the way you framed the question, Lori, makes me think, is there something that we now go backwards and assign penalties to an industry that has quite honestly kept the country powered, the lights on, keeps us moving with a level of commerce and just ability to operate that we wouldn't otherwise have. I think what it calls for is how do we address what we know in a way that can try to be more responsive to what we can forecast, as difficult as that is. But what that, it comes back to this word that we're using a lot, which is resilience. How in the face of all that we are seeing, the changes, the disruptions, the front page of the ADN is talking about the, maybe it's not on the front page, it's the second page of the ADN, about the Denali Road and the Pretty Rock Slide.
Right.
You know, that's coming out of my interior budget at a very, very, very hefty price tag. And you're looking at that and you're saying, all right, that's just one spot along the road. What are we going to do? How do we be more proactive? How do we build a more resilient future? And what can we be doing every day responsibly and proactively to reduce our emissions?
So I have one, we only have about a minute left here, and I have a couple of questions that came in by email on a lighter note that are asking about the Alaska Long Trail.
Oh, yeah.
One question says, can you outline the current federal funding for the trail and how you believe it will benefit Alaska and Alaskans? And another question is, we have hope you will become our biggest champion. This is from Beth Nordlum. We are some years and some wild landscapes away from the vision. What can you do to advance the project? Are you inviting Pete Buttigieg to Alaska this summer?
Well, I have invited Secretary Buttigieg to come to Alaska on several different occasions. I've told him, look, there's plenty to look at when you want to talk about transportation. And in fact, Bill will be happy. I said we need to make sure that you get on Alaska Marine Highway System. The Long Trails is something that I am very excited about. And it's not just the Long Trail. I've been involved with what we've been doing with the National Historic Iditarod Trail. We were also able to put into law a recognition that the Chilkoot Trail is recognized as a National Historic Trail, one of my favorite hikes in the state. And so what's happening now with the Long Trail is we have authorized funding for the study. For those who are not familiar with it, it is effectively from connecting the Iditarod Trail down in Seward, all the way up to Fairbanks and beyond. Kind of the same idea or concept that is in place with the Appalachian Trail. People don't hike the Appalachian Trail in one
right.
one
takes years
month or whatever. You do bits and pieces, but when I think about how we excite people to come to a place like Alaska, many of them want the comfort of a cruise, but so many are looking for that adventure. They want to be in a place with their family. They want to be physically active. But it's not just for the tourists. It's for us who choose to live and work and play here. So
absolutely.
I'm a super, super fan of what's coming with the Long Trail.
Well, Senator Lisa Murkowski, thank you so much for being on hand today to talk with us and answer at least some questions from Alaskans directly and some of mine. I wanted to let folks know that the senator will also be joining us for Alaska Insight on Friday night, so you can watch that program on public television on Friday night at 7:30. Thanks to our engineer, Chris Hyde, our producer, Madeline Rose, and on the phones and social media today, Michael Finelli helped us out. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.